Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Interesting new poll comparing China and the United States. Finding, for example, that two-thirds of American Chinese, two-thirds of American business leaders see China as a threat to the U.S. economy, while two-thirds of Chinese business leaders see China as partnering with the U.S. It also finds that most people in China think China will surpass the U.S. as a superpower, but the Chinese business leaders do not think so. Another finding, that a majority of Chinese business leaders are critical of their own government for its handling of U.S.-China relations. Let's find out more. The study was commissioned by the Committee of 100, a group led by Chinese Americans that focuses on improving understanding of both countries in both countries. And with us now are two of the leaders of that group. Frank Wu, a Committee of 100 member. He's also Chancellor and Dean of the University of California at Hastings College of Law. And Anla Chang, a Committee of 100 board member and a partner at the Sino-Century China Private Equity Fund. Thank you both very much for coming on WNYC. Hello from New York.
It's great to be here.
Thank you.
And let's look first at that bilateral relations question. You found 54% of Chinese business leaders are critical of their government over its relations with the United States, way up from just 19% critical in 2007. Anla Chang, what has changed?
I think, first of all, when the Chinese say that they are critical of U.S.-Chinese relations, I believe that they are not looking at specifics, but I think what they are looking for is opportunities. And I think that, in fact, you will see that many Chinese are actually looking in the United States, as well as Europe and South America, to do quite a few deals. And I think because they've had past references where they were not permitted to invest in the United States, I'm referring to some of the CNOOC deals, that the CNOOC, the oil company, mm-hmm. which was prevented in the past, and a few other instances. I think the Chinese have been a little bit hesitant. But the truth is that the Chinese are making some headway, and we have some concrete examples where they have set up plants in the Midwest and in the South, and they are aggressively looking to partner with not only American businesses, but with the government. So I think the sometimes the statistics are a result of past perceptions rather than current perceptions, and I would be surprised if the statistics don't change very quickly.
And so you interpret them as business leaders looking for opportunities for investment.
Yes.
Dean Wu, on another of these questions, why this different perception between Chinese and American business leaders over whether China is a partner with or a threat to the United States economically? What do you make of that?
Well, the survey shows many gaps like that. This is a unique survey because what we did was we asked the same questions in the United States and in China. So it's a snapshot, and we hold up a mirror to each country. On the whole, the sentiments are positive. People think quite favorably of the other country. But it's clear that even though trade is the area where there's the greatest potential for us to work together, it's also the area, according to the U.S. side, where there's a potentially the greatest threat. So the views are very different. On the U.S. side, there's a feeling that there really could be tension and conflict over trade, whereas on the China side, they don't really see trade as the issue. They see Taiwan as the issue. And so it's no surprise that there is a lack of mutual trust. It's two different cultures talking past each other. When you look at the areas where the United States survey takers wanted to see action on issues such as human rights, and you compare it to the Chinese side, what they see as most problematic is American interference in what they regard as their own internal affairs.
And certainly the survey also found explicitly a lack of trust on both sides. elites in each country do not consider the other country a trustworthy partner. And that was an interesting explanation you just gave of how that looks from each country. Among U.S. business leaders, Ms. Cheng, intellectual property rights were by far the number one issue that was cited that they have with China. Do you think the Chinese government recognizes that as a problem at this point?
They do, especially because the IP is developing within China. In the past, U.S. or European goods were to be copied. But as China is making more effort to become innovative and become creators of technology, they realize that they have to protect their own IP.
IP meaning?
Intellectual property. Ah, are you talking about
intellectual
property?
Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't get the initials. Yes.
Right. So as before, they were borrowers of IP. Currently, they're becoming more and more creators of IP. And that difference means they have to protect their own IP. And as they have more intellectual property to protect, and at the same time as the rule of law becomes more prevalent and we have more and more lawyers that are developing in China, that is when IP will become a reality, IP protection will become a reality. But it is a major issue that still has to be overcome.
We're speaking about the new major survey of elites, both opinion makers and business elites in both China and the United States, commissioned by the Committee of 100, a group of Chinese Americans working for mutual understanding in both countries. And our guests are two of those members, Ann Le Cheng, partner at the Sino-Century China Private Equity Fund, and Frank Wu, dean of the University of California at Hastings College of Law. And I want to play a clip of Mitt Romney from one of the Republican debates. And Dean Wu, get your take on whether you think things are going to be very different for U.S.-China relations depending on who's elected president. Romney has been very, very tough in his language about China throughout the campaign so far, and here's one example.
China is playing by different rules. One, they're stealing our intellectual property. Number two, they're hacking into our computer systems, both government and corporate. And finally, they're manipulating their currency. And by doing so, holding down the price of Chinese goods. If I'm president of the United States, I'm making it very clear. I love free trade. I want to open markets to free trade. But I will crack down on cheaters like China.
Dean Wu, are people in China paying attention? I'm sure they are at the top levels of government and business. And how is that heard?
Absolutely. And part of the problem is we're trapped in a vicious cycle. It's a cycle in which each side just makes the problem worse. One of the most interesting survey findings we found was that the general public in the United States, so this is on the U.S. side, the general public actually has quite favorable views of China. But when you look at how business leaders and how policymakers view the world, how do they perceive the general public, both business leaders and policymakers think that Americans really have very negative views, but they're actually wrong. And so it's not clear that campaign rhetoric, China bashing, if you will, that it's going to be effective, because on the whole, a majority of Americans of all backgrounds, of all classes, all walks of life, they generally think well of China. And so that's what's really surprising. The negative view is really held not by the general public, but it's especially held by policymakers.
Really? I'm surprised. I would have thought, and I haven't seen the numbers on this, but I would have thought it would be the other way around, that policymakers and business elites want to be able to do business with China. They want to look at complexities, and that the average American looks at China as scary authoritarian monster and threatening economic other.
Right. You would think that, but interestingly, the general public, when you ask them, what do you think of China, what do you first think of, what they first think of is culture, history, food, the Great Wall, and they think about the large population and issues such as adoption. The issues about trade and authoritarian communists lag behind. So really, they're thinking of chop suey and egg rolls when you ask about China. But on the Chinese side,
proving
exactly
once again
right.
that people don't watch the news.
Right.
Joe in Hartford, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yeah, Brian, I find this argument an obsession. Hello?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I find this obsession with China, you know, ridiculous because China per capita income is what, like $1,500?
And no, then it's second, $4,000 to $5,000.
Mm-hmm. They have these $4,000 to $5,000. I don't know where you get that from. But and then these figures come from communist leaders, and there's a limit to how far you can go by putting a lid on democracy. You're going to explode. The society is exploding from within. So, you know, all this talk about it, this is just a drama by the military-industrial infrastructure right here in the U.S. to expand the defense budget. That's the only justification for this China obsession.
Joe, thank you for your call. Ms. Chang, how much do you agree with that, and how much do you agree with his analysis that because of widespread poverty, China is exploding from within?
I'm not quite sure what he means by exploding from within, but clearly there's a huge growth. They've just raised 300 million to 300 to 400 million people out of poverty over 25 years, while it took Europe 200 years to do that. And clearly with quite, if I may use the word, capitalistic business ways in China, and in many ways, from my perception, more capitalistic than the United States, they've been able to create tremendous amount of wealth over a short period of time. However, the negative side is that there is a huge wealth gap. You know, we talk about the 1% here. They talk about the 2%. There are almost 400 billionaires in China. And while the average GDP per capita is 4,000 to 5,000, on the coastline, you can see that the GDP is much higher, but within this Tier 2 and Tier 3 cities in inner China, there are is quite a bit of poverty.
Well, in fact, the New Yorker has an article this week that's really on the Neil Hayworth intrigue, the British businessman found dead in China. But there's a quote that says poverty and income inequality in China, inequality in particular, had reached the point where some officials have predicted massive social unrest would take place. Maybe that's the same as the exploding from within that the caller references.
Mm-hmm. I think there are concerns, and we have not seen an Occupy Wall Street. And you may know that China spends a lot of money on internet policing to really keep a lid on social unrest. However, blogs have been rampant, and I think it is important to allow the public to let off steam. And so there is concern about the wealth gap, and I think that is the number one priority within China to create harmonious society.
So, mm-hmm. And they're making progress, you were saying?
They're making efforts by providing sometimes interest-free loans, credits, subsidized interest loans so that people can buy cars, refrigerators, TV. And also they're trying to make it easier for individuals within the inner cities to create jobs back home.
In our last 45 seconds, Dean Wu, your group's annual conference was held last week in Pasadena. What was the reaction like to these findings? And what's the agenda, and I'm sorry to squeeze this, but in 30 seconds, for improving U.S.-China relations and some of these, what you see as misunderstandings?
It's so crucial for us to do this, and as Chinese-Americans, we hope to play a bridge-building role. It's clear that visits, contact, learning more, all of that helps. So there is potential for positive change here.
Frank Wu, Committee of 100 member and Chancellor and Dean of the University of California Hastings College of Law, and Le Cheng, Committee of 100 board member and partner at the Sino-Century China Private Equity Fund. The Committee of 100, a group of Chinese Americans working to foster understanding in both countries, is out with this major survey of public opinion in each. Thank you both very much for having this dialogue.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.